bring myself to be too broken up about it. Her breath was deep and hard. My hand fell to her back, rubbing softly. Finally, she sat up. She licked my throat with a little flick, cleaning off the rest of the blood. I tipped her head back and did the same, relishing the final tastes of her. The shift of her hips with the movement reminded me that I was still inside her. Another kiss, another minute, and I could have had her again. But that blood and sex-drunk weariness had settled over me, and I could tell Araya was fighting it too. I fell back onto the bed, turning on my side and gently guiding her down to the blankets as I slipped from her. She curled up on her side and I folded around her, our bodies fitting easily together. Already I sensed her heartbeat slowing, her breath calming. Already my own eyelashes were fluttering. I kissed her shoulder, her cheek, settled down in a nest of her hair. Her scent surrounded me. Araya had always smelt so damn alive, not the scent of incense or withered flowers like so many vampires, but the scent of spring. I felt the overwhelming urge to say something to her, even though I wasn't sure what that would be. But Araya's hand fell over mine, and that touch somehow seemed to mean more than all the words put together. Maybe for the best. Because sleep took me so fast, they slipped through my fingers like sand anyway.
Chapter 46. Araya. I awoke to soft kisses over my cheek, my ear, my neck. These last months, waking up always felt like a battle, as if I was being dragged back to the land of the living, kicking and screaming. This was not a battle. This was a gentle summons, sweet and tender. I felt, for the first time in so long, safe. Safe for the first time since the last time I had woken up like this, in Rain's arms. It took several seconds for my awareness to come back to me. I was naked, in bed, in Rain's arms. I was sore from the battle I'd fought to save his life, and then from the fucking we'd done when I refused to leave him. His kisses trailed to my throat, a tiny stab of pain as they brushed the wounds where I'd let him drink from me. Mother, I still tasted the tang of his blood on my own tongue. Every piece of this seemed more outlandish than the last. A month ago, hell, weeks ago, I would have been appalled with myself. Instead, I felt strangely at peace. I opened my eyes and rolled over. Rain propped himself up on one elbow, watching me. A familiar little smirk clung to his lips. Evening, princess. Funny how intimate those two words sounded. Maybe it was just the way his voice sounded rolling over them. Seductive and warm and just a little bit shy. I murmured, hello? What else was I going to say? The smirk softened.
Hello,
he whispered. My gaze trailed down his bare body, taking in the expanse of muscles and scarred skin. Pausing for just a moment at his cock, partially hardened, before returning to the crisscross of wounds over his abdomen and sides. I questioned my sanity as I took them in. They seemed so much better than yesterday, when Rain had barely been able to move. Following my gaze, he said,
the blood helped. A lot.
His lips brushed over my forehead.
Thank you.
I squirmed a little at the way he said that. So sincerely. Of course, I muttered, like it was what I'd planned all along. If I'd been thinking logically, it did make sense to let Rain drink from me. I'd seen before how much it helped him heal, and he'd needed that desperately. But I couldn't even lie to myself. I hadn't offered my blood to him out of a sense of practicality. I'd offered it to him out of blind, maddening desire. Desire to have more of him inside me and more of myself inside him. And goddess, it had been. I cleared my throat to avoid getting lost in that particular cascade of distracting thoughts. I twitched as his fingertips traced my abdomen, tickling over my belly button.
"Looks like it helped you, too," he said.
I blinked down at myself, brow furrowed. The cuts were still there, yes, and still sore, but they no longer bled. They looked as if they'd been healing for several weeks, not for 12 hours. It rivaled the effects of a healing potion.
"Is that normal?" I asked.
"Not sure if anything about either of us is normal," he said.
Well, that was true.
"Air blood, if I had to guess," he went on. "Maybe combined with your half-human lineage, I don't know, but I'm not about to question it."
His touch ran over one of the shallower wounds, tracing a lightning crack scar of pink flesh. For the briefest moment, his face darkened, before settling again as he turned back to me.
"Aurea," he said softly,
I wasn't prepared for this, for his heartfelt words. I had no regrets about last night, but I couldn't open myself up for him again today. Touch was one thing, but words? Words were complicated.
"We need to go back to the castle," I said.
I was brisk and businesslike, just as I had once been with him when we strategized together in the Qajari. Rain's mouth closed. Understanding fell over his face quickly. He was a half step behind me, but he slipped into the same role just as easily.
"I know," he said.
That was it. No questions, no hesitation. Anyone might have laughed in my face for even saying it, but I felt a twinge of satisfaction that he had already been thinking the same thing. Maybe it was a death sentence to go back there. Anyone else would have advised that we flee Sivrinaj and not come back unless we had an army to bring with us. I knew what Vincent would have said.
"Don't feed yourself to the wolves, little serpent. Know when your bite isn't strong enough."
But of course, Rain already accepted it as simple truth that we needed to go back, and immediately. Because his inner circle was still in that castle. Misha was still in that castle. He would not leave her there, especially not in Simon's clutches. I wouldn't either. It was never even an option. I knew, even without him saying anything, that Rain was thinking about Misha, because I could see the pained expression fall over his face. One part fury, one part agony. My hand fell to his arm, firm and comforting. "We'll get her out," I said. "And in the meantime, you know she's putting up a hell of a fight." A faint hint of a smile, which immediately dimmed.
"That," he said, "is what I'm afraid of."
Rain hated Simon. But I'd come to realize he was also afraid of him. Genuinely afraid. The way I had been afraid my entire life. I wondered if my fear seemed as outlandish to Rain as his fear did to me. As undeserving of his time. My fingers tightened around his arm. "You are better than him," I said more viciously than I'd intended. "Fuck him. We are going to destroy him. Bloodborne army or no." So easily that "we" rolled off my lips. The corner of Rain's mouth twitched.
"There she is."
He sat up, face hardening into an expression I'd seen many times before. The same look that would come over him during one of the Qajari's trials. A kind of bloodthirsty focus, like he'd been presented with a very entertaining puzzle.
"So, princess," he said. "That leaves us to figure out how to get back into the castle we just barely escaped alive, now that we've established that we're fucking insane."
"Two of us. A castle full of Rishan and Bloodborne soldiers, most of whom were probably frantically looking for us. Septimus, presumably, still would want me for my blood. Simon needed to kill Rain, and quickly, if he wanted to get his own airmark. The nobles would support him, due to his history alone, if out of nothing more than distaste for Rain. But that goodwill would only last so long if Simon never managed to get a mark of his own."
"Bad odds," I said,
but I found myself suppressing a smile.
"Oh, you look dismayed,"
he said wryly. I shrugged. Reminds me of old times. It's been a while since I've been underestimated.
We know just how much you love that. Going up against impossible odds.
Despite myself, I smiled. You loved it too.
I'll admit it.
He flopped back on the bed, hands behind his head.
So, if I remember right, this is the part where we come up with some kind of brilliant, twisted plan.
It was indeed, and my mind was blank. I fell next to him, staring up at the crooked wooden planks above us. A spider swung from beam to beam, crafting a silver silken web. It was a chaotic thing, near invisible threads strung messily into the shadows, functional but far from beautiful. Like fate itself, I supposed. For a few long moments, we thought.
So, what do we have?
Rain said. Then, to start answering his own question, he said,
We have us.
A human and a usurped king, I said flatly.
No. Two heirs who won the mother-damned Kajari.
Fair point. Rain and I had individually managed to fight through incredibly unbalanced battles in the Kajari, and done even more together. What's more, our power had grown exponentially since receiving our airmarks. Sure, mine was still difficult to control, but I'd used it to kill goddess knew how many soldiers to save Rain. Somehow it had seemed easier then, lost in a frenzy for blood. All my life, Vincent had admonished my emotional impulsivity, teaching me that stoicism and focus were the only paths to mastering my magic. Yet I'd never felt more powerful than I did in those moments, totally out of control of myself. I couldn't let myself think about that too much now. How easily Rain being in danger had unlocked something primal in me. Misha in danger, I hoped, might unlock the same viciousness. The corner of Rain's mouth quirked, albeit with a humorless edge that I suspected foreshadowed his own viciousness.
Honored you have such faith in us, Princess, he said. And after all this time.
He got out of bed and crossed the room. I eyed his backside. I couldn't help it, as he leaned over the bureau and rummaged through it. When he turned around, something sharp and glittering glinted in his hands, nestled in silk. I recognized it before he returned to the bed. My brows leapt. Vincent's mirror. You have it, I breathed.
I got it out of the castle as soon as I could. You think I was about to let Septimus keep it? Or leave it lying around where you could find it and bring another round of Hiage soldiers to my doorstep?
I was almost offended. Almost. It was a totally reasonable concern. Either way, I was wildly grateful. I traced the edge of the shard with my fingertips, watching a little sliver of my reflection. So this gives us Jasmine, I said. Rain gave me a sidelong glance.
You trust her?
A valid question to ask, in the wake of a coup. Rain couldn't trust his own nobles, and hell, I couldn't trust many of mine either. But for better or for worse, Jasmine had been nothing if not loyal. She never had to follow the orders of her king's human daughter, who she'd never even liked much anyway. And yet, she had, without hesitation. That counted for something. I do, I said. But whatever Hiage forces I might have, we're far away from Sivrenage now, and we didn't have time to raise an army before we moved. I looked across the room to the pile of my belongings that had been strewn over the floor yesterday. I slid from the bed and stood. I was endlessly aware of Rain's stare running over my naked body. There was a strange kind of satisfaction in that, I had to admit. Strange kind of pleasure, too. I rummaged around in the pile of bloody silk and pulled out the Taker of Hearts. Even sheathed, I could feel its magic burrowing under my skin. Not long ago, that had been uncomfortable, almost painful, like my flesh was too weak for it. Now? I could sense power in that discomfort, heady and a little disorienting, like vampire wine. I could feel, too, my father's presence in it, like he was standing right over my shoulder, silently critiquing my grip. And we have this, I said.
a weapon that Vincent had used to kill hundreds, thousands even, of incredible warriors over the years. A weapon powerful enough to defend a throne for 200 years. A weapon powerful enough to destroy one of the last true great Rishan cities. My stomach turned at that thought. I lifted my gaze to meet Rain's. No more joking in it now. Not even desire. No, he was utterly serious, mouth set. I wondered if he was thinking about the same thing I was. The ashes of Salane, and the role this weapon may have played in making them.
Nothing to scoff at, he said quietly.
The pride I'd once felt in being able to wield this weapon soured slightly. No, nothing to scoff at. I'd taken down dozens of Simon's men with this thing, and that had been alone. With Rain beside me? Hell, we could almost fight our way through the castle by ourselves. Almost. As if reading my mind, Rain said, if we were taking them by surprise, we might be able to do it by brute force. But not tonight, when we're the most wanted people in the House of Night. I settled back at the edge of the bed. Rain and I were silent, thinking. He was right. Brute strength wouldn't work. But I hadn't won the Qajari by being the strongest anyway. I'd won because I had spent my whole life learning how to survive in Obi Trace despite what I was or wasn't. Learning tricks that could get me farther with less. Tricks like... My lips curled slowly. Even before I looked up, I could hear the smile in Rain's voice.
I think I recognize that face.
I said, we have one more thing. We have me. Chapter 47. Araya. Vincent had taught me how to stay alive. That meant learning how to fight, yes, but it also meant learning how to flee. My father had created a castle perfect for a man who knew one day his greatest threats could come from within his own house. The tunnels were extensive, confusing, and disjointed. Septimus was aware of some of them. My own foolishness had seen to that. But he couldn't know all of them, let alone guard them. The hard part would be making it there. I was certain that Vincent had created multiple avenues into and out of the castle. Unfortunately, he hadn't trusted me with any of them. In hindsight, it made sense that he didn't want to give me ways to sneak away from him. Still, he'd given me instructions on one way out. One way that was so unpleasant, he could feel confident that I wouldn't use it unless my life was in imminent danger. Much had been written over the years about the Latouro River. Visitors had spun plenty of poetry about the way it wound through the dunes like a streak of silver paint beneath the moonlight. Some claimed it represented the lifeblood of Nyaxia herself. I imagined that maybe, out there in the desert, it was indeed a thing of majestic beauty. However, in the heart of Sivrenage, it was as much piss as it was water. Sewage had to go somewhere. In the city, most figured it was easiest for it to go right into the river. Hell, many people decided to skip the washroom altogether and put it there directly. Many, many, many people. I was certain of this as the water, if it could be called that, swallowed me up. I couldn't hear much underwater, but I certainly could make out Rain's appalled, garbled curse as the piss water surrounded us. I forced my eyes open and then immediately regretted it. I couldn't see anything under there anyway. Our heads broke the surface at the same time. Rain shook his hair out like a dog, sending spatters of rancid liquid over my face. I wrinkled my nose. Ah, watch it.
What, is that too much piss for you?
He pointedly looked around.
Not sure that's the problem, princess.
I flicked a handful of water at him. Despite his attempted dodge, it caught him squarely in the cheek, which I appreciated. He scowled, but didn't protest, like he knew that he deserved it. I lifted my chin to motion down the river, where the back of the castle stood looming over us in shadow. We'd picked a secluded area of the river bordering the human districts to jump in without being seen. but the activity up ahead was visible even from this distance. A smattering of torches and nightfire, and the thrum of distant voices. Even the castle was unusually well lit, the windows pulsing firelight that revealed hints of distant silhouettes within. It reminded me of the way this city had looked the night of the Qajari's finale, the night Rain had taken over. "I won't be able to see underwater," I said. "It's straight ahead, then to the left once we get closer to the castle. One of the grates leads inside and connects to the tunnels. Stay close to me."
"One of the grates?" he repeated. I understood his point. The castle was enormous and had a dozen sewage grates on its western side alone.
I was so young when Vincent had showed me this, and it had been from the inside out, not outside in. I didn't remember exactly which one. Luck would, hopefully, be on our side. I winced. "I'll have to try a few." He laughed softly.
"It's not fun if it's too easy."
That was one way of looking at it.
"Ready?"
he said. I glanced down at the rancid muck. No, I was not. I was glad that Rain had packed a few different sets of leathers for my grand escape. I'd have to burn these. But aloud, I just said, "Absolutely." Together, we ducked beneath the water. I wasn't the best swimmer. Rain was fast, but he had to keep stopping to let me catch up to him. Worse, I couldn't see anything. Even in the few seconds I could force my eyes open at a time, I saw nothing but cloudy darkness. Rain and I stole silent gulps of air at the longest intervals possible, especially as we approached the castle. Guards were everywhere, both Rishon and Bloodborne, though they appeared to be wildly disorganized. Most rushed around, yelling at each other rather than standing watch. They were, we pieced together, trying to find Rain, and they were certain they'd do so out in the city as he attempted to flee, not at their doorstep as he came crawling back to the castle. Fair assumption. This was not what most rational people would do, let alone by swimming through sludge. And it was indeed sludge by the time we made it to the castle. The liquid too thick to be called water, sticking to my skin and hair every time we rose to take a precious gulp of air. The smell was so putrid that even those seconds above the surface weren't such a treat anymore, no matter whether I breathed through my nose or mouth. I could taste it. At one point, I caught Rain eyeing me, a pursed smile at his lips, like he was trying very hard not to laugh. I scowled at him and he shook his head. Even silent, though, I could hear the words,
"That fucking face."
I had to be grateful for the sewage, though. At least it disguised our scents, especially mine. Even when we swam mere feet away from soldiers on the streets above, we passed undetected. When we finally reached the turn where the river met the castle's aqueducts, I thanked the goddess under my breath. We had to fight a surprisingly strong current to make it up to the castle, since the channels had been constructed at a slight downward angle to ensure the constant outward flow of waste. Clinging to the side, allowing the stone wall to shield me, I poked my head above the water to examine the grates ahead. I could not even remotely remember which one led into the tunnels. I dove again, throwing myself against the first set of iron bars. Rain swam beside me, helping me pull at the metal. Not the first, nor the second. When we rose for another quick breath, the voices of soldiers were even closer. Fuck. The longer we stayed in one place, the greater our risk of being seen. I didn't know how much longer we had here before someone would wander too close. "Please, Vincent, this had better be the one." We slipped under the water and threw ourselves against the next set of bars. And maybe the goddess or my dead father were looking out for us after all, because this one ground into movement immediately. The door was awkward, designed to be pushed out from the inside instead of entered from the outside. Rain held it open for me to wiggle through, and I did the same for him as he squeezed between the metal rods. No easy feat against this current. Stronger than ever this close to the castle sewers. Inside, Rain had to grab my arm and use his body mass to keep me from getting swept away. By the time the tunnels started to rise, We were practically dragging ourselves along the slime-slicked walls. My muscles screamed. My lungs burned, desperate for air. I clutched the strap over my chest, suddenly very afraid that the current would sweep the taker of hearts off my back. When the floor finally rose, and we could stand, I choked out, "Thank the mother."
"That," Rain muttered, "was fucking vile."
He wiped sludge from his face as I leapt out of the water and dragged myself up a steep step at the side of the tunnel. The air was hot and stagnant, and it absolutely reeked of shit. It was still a goddess-damned perfumery compared to where we'd just come from. Rain followed me, the two of us now standing on a raised pathway along the edge of the sewer. It was very dark in here. I conjured a little ball of nightfire in my palm, and blue light bathed Rain's face. I snickered.
"What?"
he said. Here he was, the nightborn king, drenched, wearing ill-fitting cheap leathers, face completely covered in shit, save for the domino mask of clean skin he'd wiped around his eyes. He read my face and sighed.
"Because you look so fucking fantastic, princess. Ix's tits, let's get going. Where's this tunnel?"
Right. That was a good question. I shuffled along the wall, hand-pressed to the brick, rough, old, slimy. More or less how one would expect stone that had been marinating in centuries worth of wet excrement to feel. "It was around here somewhere," I muttered, feeling around the bricks. "Under one of these arches." My fingertip snagged on something. At first I thought it was just a crack in the bricks, but a second pass and a closer look with the nightfire revealed otherwise. No, it was an outline. "Here," I said.
"I've got it."
Rain threw his weight against the door. He strained against it for a few seconds, face contorted, before giving up and leaning against the wall.
"You're sure this opens in this direction?"
"Fuck. I certainly hoped it did. Otherwise, we were screwed." Vincent was so thorough. I couldn't imagine that he would go through the trouble of creating such an elaborate path out unless he also planned to use it as an emergency path back in, too, if he needed it. But only if he needed it. "He'd have made sure that only he could use it," I said. "Maybe I..." On a hunch, I grabbed my blade from my hip and swiped the tip over my palm, opening a delicate river of red. Then I pressed the bleeding wound to the door, cringing slightly at the sting of the slimy surface against the cut. My first thought was, I am definitely going to get an infection from this. My second thought was, this isn't going to work. But those words barely had crossed my mind before the door opened before us with a growl of grinding stone, revealing a narrow, dark tunnel lit with night flame lanterns. That was quick and easier than I had thought it would be. Easier than using my blood to operate Vincent's magic ever had been before. I stared down at my bloody palm. I could feel Rain's gaze on me, making the same observation, no doubt.
"Looks like the door wasn't just for him," he said.
I swallowed thickly.
"Did you really think,"
Vincent whispered in the back of my mind,
"that I wouldn't account for you too, my little serpent?"
I flinched. Once I'd craved his voice so fiercely. Now, it brought with it a wave of complicated emotions. It didn't make sense. He'd hidden these paths from me, along with my magic, my blood, and my past. And yet, he had loved me enough, too, to offer me this safety precaution alongside his own. So did he trust me? Or not? Or did even he not know? "I don't know," I said curtly. "Maybe it's just recognizing his blood in me. Let's go. It's this way." I drew my father's sword from my back, trying and failing to ignore the overwhelming wave of his presence that hit me the moment my hand closed around the hilt, and started walking before Rain could say anything else. Not that he tried. The tunnels were poorly maintained, narrow and winding, a side effect of them being kept in absolute secrecy.
They'd been built around the existing infrastructure of the castle by an extremely limited team of workers, and then never maintained afterward, because Vincent did not want to risk a single soul knowing about them. After 100 years or so, they were starting to show their wear. Even though Rain and I were already under the castle, it took a good long while of walking before the tunnels began to look a bit more like the hallways I'd grown more familiar with. Soon, we scaled sets of crooked stairs, leading us up into the building itself. Muffled, harried voices echoed through the walls, all of them frantic, even if we couldn't make out the words.
"Sounds like they're having a wonderful time,"
Rain muttered, as the unintelligible voices of warriors yelling at each other faded away behind us.
"Not sure that you're in a good position to go judging someone else's coup," I said,
"seeing how yours has gone so damned well so far." He laughed softly.
"Fair point."
We reached the top of this set of stairs, the tunnel now splitting off in two directions. I kept my voice low, conscious of how thin the walls could be in some parts of this ancient building.
"We're behind the second floor library right now." I pointed to the left path. "That one's yours. It will take you to the dungeons. Just go down and to the right."
Rain eyed the other path.
"And that's yours?"
I nodded. It would take me up to the upper floors of the castle, up to my rooms. My rooms, where I had hidden Vincent's pendant. Only I knew the convoluted path up to the top level of the castle. Only I could carry Vincent's blood-bound artifacts, so that meant I had to be the one to go up to get it. Because, of course, we couldn't leave that in Simon or Septimus's possession. We may not know what it was, but we knew it was too important to lose. Which meant that Rain would need to go to the dungeons to rescue Misha by himself, at least temporarily, until I could join him. We'd talked this through at length. We couldn't both go to both places, which would attract attention too quickly. Our only chance at achieving both goals was splitting up, albeit temporarily. Still, now that our paths diverged, I couldn't help but hesitate, my eyes lingering on Rain's body, where I knew his leathers hid evidence of still healing wounds. Despite myself, I was starting to doubt that this was a good idea.
"Are you sure you can do this?" I said.
His brow twitched.
"Are you worried about me?"
"I'm being practical."
"I'll be just fine. I can handle a few of Simon's guards. I'm the Nightborn King, remember?"
"I remember having to save your ass from a few of Simon's guards about 36 hours ago."
His smirk faltered, like this was a legitimate sore spot for him. Rain may try to play the unflappable king, but I knew he really, really didn't like to lose.
"That wasn't a fair fight," he said. "They drugged me and surprised me. I look forward to the rematch."
I was unconvinced.
"Besides," he said, "if it all goes poorly, I just need to stay alive for a few minutes until you can come save me all over again. And I'll even let you gloat about it all you damn well please."
It was a little appealing. A little. Still, I couldn't shake the knot of unease in my stomach. Maybe Rain felt some of what I did too, as he gazed over my shoulder to the right path, stairs disappearing into shadow.
"Be quick," he said. "In and out. Simon doesn't deserve the honor of killing you."
I scoffed, like this prospect was ridiculous. My bravado, though, was a little less convincing than Rain's. Yes, I'd killed dozens when rescuing Rain. Yes, I'd won the Qajari. But I still had a lifetime's worth of fear of vampires ground into me. A hard thing to leave behind.
"Stop wasting time," I whispered, and started to turn away, but he caught my arm.
When I looked back at him, there was no more teasing in his face, no false confidence. His hand reached out to brush the angle of my chin. So briefly, I didn't even have time to react to the touch.
"Careful, princess,"
he murmured.
"All right."
I held that stare for a moment longer than I meant to.
"You too," I said. "Be careful."
And with that, we each slipped into our own shadows. Chapter 48. Araya. The hallways nearest to my room were the riskiest. I avoided the path I had taken the day that I'd escaped down to Vincent's office, but I was still very aware that Septimus had known about those tunnels. Though the path I was on now didn't directly connect to the one I had taken then, I couldn't be sure how much else he had discovered. By the time I reached the top level of the castle, I was moving very slowly, barely breathing, listening for any guards while simultaneously being silent as a ghost. I didn't hear much activity out there, unlike on the lower floors. The only thing in this wing was my room and Rain's, neither of which were the actual king's quarters. Simon and Septimus had managed to launch their coup successfully by catching Rain off guard, but that didn't mean they had any more manpower than he did. They'd have to use their forces sparingly, focused where they were most needed. I had to hope that neither Simon nor Septimus thought they were needed up here. I waited at the passageway to the main hall for several long seconds, ear to the door, before moving. When I heard nothing, I slipped through, sword in hand, promptly closing the passageway behind me. The hall was empty. Silently, quickly, I moved along the wall, rounding one corner and then another until I came to our hallway. Emptiness would have been too easy. Two guards waited for me. Both of them, thankfully, were Rishan, not Bloodborne. No blood magic to deal with. They recognized me right away, but I didn't give them time to react before I lunged for them. Two of them. Once that would have been intimidating. Now, it was a relief. Only two? I could handle two. As if awakened by the promise of imminent bloodshed, the Taker of Hearts warmed in my hands, the red glow of the blade flaring. I thought about Misha as the two men started for me. I thought about the way their chosen master had abused Rain, and the marks he had left long after the ones on his body had faded. And suddenly, it wasn't so hard to call upon my magic, the cold white of night fire mingling with the hot bloom of Vincent's sword. The last time I'd used it, I'd barely gotten to appreciate what an incredible weapon it was. This time, when the blade plunged through the first soldier's chest, barely meeting resistance, burns of searing white spreading across his chest, I had to admire it. It had never before been quite so easy to kill. The second man staggered back in shock when he saw how quickly his companion fell. But to his credit, he wasn't a coward. After a momentary stagger, he was coming at me again, sword drawn. That half-second pause, though, that was enough. I stepped aside, using his own momentum to throw him against the wall. It was awkward to use the sword when I was so accustomed to using my dual blades. I had to force my body to fight in a completely different way, mimicking Vincent's steps instead of leaning on my own. In that moment of hesitation, he opened a slash across my cheek that left me hissing in pain. I could so perfectly envision how Vincent would have countered. I'd witnessed it many times. My execution wasn't perfect, but it got the job done. When I pulled back, my breath heavy, the Rishan was slumped against the wall, the Taker of Hearts skewered through his chest. I withdrew it, not bothering to wipe the blade. Not that I had to. It was as if the weapon absorbed it, as hungry for bloodshed as I was. My night fire simmered. Already I was thinking about wherever Rain was right now, thinking far too vividly about him being overtaken in the dungeons, surrounded by soldiers, getting strung up again the way he had during the ball. I went to my door and tried the knob. Locked. Of fucking course. I knelt, examining the locks. All four required keys. Could I melt them the way I had the day I escaped, or... I glanced down at my sword, coated with the beating remnants of blood. It seemed ridiculous to try to stab a lock into submission. Then again, if any weapon could do it. My gaze fell to the blood on the blade. Then, the bodies it had come from. I went to the nearest slumped corpse. There, on his belt, was a little ring of silver keys. Considering stabbing a door before I even looked for the keys, goddess fucking help me. I was grateful Rain wasn't here to see this. With some brief fumbling, I unlocked three of the four locks.
It was only on the fourth one that it occurred to me. Why was my room being guarded? And why was it locked to begin with? This thought only hit me as I pushed open the door, only to immediately dodge a vanity chair swinging at my head. Fuck! I spat, hitting the ground in just the right way to disturb the worst of my wounds. Gods! Thump, as the wielder of the weaponized chair let it fall to the ground. I rolled over, wincing, to see Misha standing over me, her hands covering her mouth, eyes wide. She was still in her gown from the party, though it was now wrinkled, her makeup smeared. I am so glad you're alive! She dropped to her knees, looking like she was about to fling her arms around my neck, then went suddenly serious, brow contorted.
What the hell are you doing here? And why do you smell like that?
Once Misha's questions started, they didn't stop.
Where's Rain? She asked as she helped me up. How did you get in here? Did you see what's happening outside? Is there an army coming?
And then, again, like the first time wasn't enough,
where's Rain?
We can talk and walk, I said. We don't have much time. Though, goddess, I was happy to see her. I lowered to grab my sword, which had fallen in Misha's wild chair attack, and when she saw it, her eyes bulged.
Is that?
Yes.
Gods, Aurea, you've actually wielded it?
For some reason, Misha's disbelief was the thing to make my own set in all at once, a wave that I'd been suppressing for the last 2 days. It had been a very, very strange 2 days.
It's yes.
I didn't know what else to say, so I just cleared my throat. Let's hurry. Guards might be coming, or
there were only those two.
Misha put aside her shock, her face going serious. The pendant. Right. I went to my vanity and yanked open the top drawer. Why are you here? I asked. Why aren't you in the dungeons? A beat of silence.
Let's just go, she said, going to the door, her back to me. You said we don't have time.
I paused. There was a note to her voice that seemed odd. But she was right, we didn't have time. I rummaged through one drawer of my vanity, then another, my heart rate rising. It had been in here. The pendant had been in here. I was certain of it. I had been very careful about where I put it. I checked on it every night. But in the drawer was only a nest of useless fucking silks. No pendant. Not even a hint of its magic. Goddess fucking damn it, I muttered.
What?
Misha asked. Did someone come in here? I ripped open another drawer, just in case I was wrong, even though I knew I wasn't.
Before me? I've only been here for a day.
It took a few hours for them to... I slammed the drawer shut, hissing a curse. They'd found it then. They'd searched this room. Of course they had. Septimus was a prick, but he wasn't stupid. It was gone. If it was in this room, I'd feel it. I didn't have time to think about what that meant. Not when, with every passing second, Rain could be having his ass handed to him down in that dungeon. I returned to Misha, who stared at me with a wrinkle between her brows. She had questions, I knew, but like me, she knew now was not the time to ask them. She went to one of the Rishon corpses and grabbed the sword from his still rigid hand. I'd fought alongside Misha several times now, but it still seemed a little strange every time I saw her with a weapon, mostly because she was so competent with them, and that seemed at odds with a personality like hers. The two of us crept down the hall, moving swiftly and silently along the walls. We just needed to get back to the tunnel and get back down to Rain before... It was the worst luck. Horrifically, hilariously, terrible luck. A figure arrived at the top of the stairs at the exact same moment that we rounded the corner. We had no time to hear his steps and backtrack. Our eyes locked, ours to his to ours. Fuck, I thought. Misha went so still it was like she stopped breathing. Before us stood the shadow-born prince. Chapter 49. Aurea. It took me a moment to recognize him. I'd only seen him from across the room at the wedding, and I'd been distracted then. Highborn vampire men tended to have the same sort of look about them. The high cheekbones, the smooth skin, the sharp eyes, the dangerous allure designed to lure in prey. The Shadowborn prince had all those things in abundance. A beautiful, dangerous person who fit in seamlessly among all the other beautiful, dangerous people. It was only once I saw the diadem upon his head of thick hair and the style of his clothing, fine, tight-fitting brocades, that it clicked into place. A little smile of recognition spread over his lips, too, though his gaze fell to me only for a moment before sliding behind me, lingering on Misha. What the hell was he doing here? If I'd given even the slightest thought to where the Shadowborn prince had gone when the coup broke out, I would have assumed that he'd fled the city. What interest would a Shadowborn have in remaining to watch the Nightborn tear each other apart? Then again, why wouldn't he want to watch that? Vampires, shrewd and bloodthirsty, so easily entertained by violence, so enthralled by the idea of their enemies on their knees. And why wouldn't Simon want him to see it all, if it meant a chance at gaining the respect of a powerful Obetrayan leader? Smart of him, because the prince was valuable. If I was a better diplomat, maybe I could have seized this opportunity. I could imagine Rain doing so skillfully, putting on just the right mask to show the prince what he wanted to see. But I wasn't Rain. I wasn't Vincent. I looked at this prince and saw nothing but a threat, every nerve in my body screaming, "Kill him." Doing that would be foolish, a political nightmare, but... The prince stepped closer, his eyebrows raising. "Well," he said, "this is..." A smear of bronze and gold streaked past me. The brush of a body knocked me momentarily off balance. The next thing I knew, Misha was on top of the prince, and blood was everywhere. I had never seen Misha fight like this, not even in the Qajari. It was animalistic, not her typical light, quick movements, but vicious and brutal. The two of them tangled on the ground, limbs flailing, wisps of shadow magic making it impossible to make out what was happening. I dove after her a split second after she moved, but by then, their fight was already a mess of gore. First, Misha was on top of him, stabbing wildly, red-black blood spattering her face and then mine as I rushed over to them. Then, just as I was within striking distance, he slammed Misha to the floor, snarling as his dagger inched closer to her face. All thoughts about diplomacy or alliances or impending war disappeared. I threw myself against him, wrenching him off her. He recovered fast, recoiling, turning on me. I had my sword ready to charge through his chest, but before I could, Misha leapt on him. It was an incredible strike, even by the standards of vampire speed and strength. Accurate, quick, powerful. She didn't even hesitate as her blade breached his breastbone. It was so gracefully beautiful that the ugly slam of his body against the wall startled me. She'd driven that sword all the way through him, and she still just kept pushing. Pushing that blade against the wall, the two of them inching closer. Her face was unrecognizable. A mask of fury. Remnants of her gold makeup settling into lines of pure rage. The Shadowborn prince did not blink as he died. And when he was gone, his eyes just kept staring right through her. She still kept pushing, even though the blade was now buried in the wall. Her once stunning golden gown was now drenched in black. The silence was suddenly deafening, save for Misha's heaving, shaking breath. She was trembling violently. I touched her shoulder. She drew in a gasp and stumbled backwards, her hands clapping over her mouth. The sword remained stuck in the wall, through the prince's body. "Oh, gods," she breathed. Oh, gods, what did I just..." She had just murdered a prince of the House of Shadow. Cold fear settled over me. I stuffed it down, far beneath more pressing matters,
We can't worry about that.
But Misha whirled to me, and something about the look in her eyes gave me pause. I recognized that look. It went deeper than the frenzied shock of an unexpected kill. Perhaps I had worn a similar expression the night I had run to Vincent's bedchamber in tears after my lover had raped me. My mouth closed. I thought of the expression on Misha's face when she had seen the prince at the wedding. And I knew. I didn't have to ask. But she still choked out,
He's the one who...
The man who had taken her as a teenager. Who had turned her against her will. Who had abandoned her to die when she got sick. Now I understood why Misha was brought up here to these rooms. Somewhere comfortable and attractive, rather than unpleasant dungeons. She was a gift returned to her maker. A token to keep the foreign prince's favor. My gaze fell to the prince's body, which slowly sagged against the blade, skewering him to the wall. I resisted the overpowering desire to spit on his corpse. Diplomatic issues be fucking damned. I couldn't bring myself to be sorry. I grabbed the hilt of her sword and yanked it from the wall, and the corpse, which went sliding down to the floor with a dull thunk. I held the weapon out to her. Rain needs us. It was all I needed to say. She blinked, clearing almost tears, her jaw set. She nodded and took the sword, the prince's blood dripping onto the tile floor. "Let's go," she said. We moved swiftly through the tunnels. I prayed that I would find Rain at our rendezvous point, the juncture of the two paths where we had last separated. But when we flew down that last set of stairs, nothing met us there but two darkened hallways. Dread clenched in my stomach, but I didn't hesitate. "That way," I said to Misha, and the two of us swept down the next path, the one that would take us down to the dungeons. I knew what we were charging into before we reached the door. Misha heard it before I did, with her superior ears. But the sounds grew louder quickly, a distant thrum of banging and grunts through the walls. I knew what violence sounded like. Soon we were both running, abandoning stealth for speed. By the time we made it to the door, there was little doubt of what was going on beyond it. It took palpable effort to force myself to slow down as we slipped through, the tunnel letting us out into a hall just beyond the dungeons. The sound of steel and flesh echoed against the stone walls. Three long strides and I was around the corner. Movements. Guards, steel, bodies, blood, Rain. I barely took the time to observe all this before I was throwing myself into the fight. My sword found one guard's back, aiming straight for the heart. The blade cut through the flesh so easily, with so little resistance. Rain flung the body off him, meeting my eyes for only a split second before he had to turn his attention to the other soldier lunging at him. That moment, though, it was enough to convey so many things, a million shades of relief. Rain, injured as he still was, had been struggling against half a dozen guards. More, maybe, before we had gotten there. Even with the help of his asterisk. Now, that changed. I'd forgotten how good it felt to fight beside Rain, how intuitively we understood each other, how he watched my body even without watching. Anticipating every move, complimenting it. It was like slipping back into a comfortable jacket. Strike after strike blended together, my awareness fading save for the next move, the next opponent. My nightfire flared at my blade and Rain's asterisk surged at his, our light and dark intertwining. Alone, he had struggled. Together, we were devastatingly efficient. Minutes and the final body fell. I pulled my blade from the still twitching guard and turned to Rain. He swept me up in an embrace before I could even open my mouth, his face burying into the space between my neck and shoulder. And then, just as quickly, he released me, leaving me swaying. "What was that for?" I said. "Your endless charms," he replied. Then he saw Misha and stilled. His eyes widened at the sight of her blood-covered gown. "Where were you?" he said. But she just smiled and shook her head as if shaking away the vacant look that had been there moments ago.
Later. Good to see you too.
She was right. We didn't have time. We were lucky that Simon's forces were split in too many directions right now, but it was only a matter of time before either the bloodbath upstairs or down here attracted more attention. The cells were built into the walls and barred with thick, solid metal doors, with only a small slit looking in. Rain was already rummaging through the bodies, groping for keys, and when he found them, he tossed them in the air with satisfaction. Then he went to the first door, swinging it open to reveal a highly disgruntled-looking Vale. He was still wearing his wedding finery, though it looked like he'd put up a hell of a fight, the silk torn and blood-spattered.
Lilith,
he blurted out desperately, like the name had been thrashing behind his teeth for hours. Rain had been so sure Vale would be the one to betray him, but looking at him now, the possibility seemed incomprehensible. Rain's face went serious, like he was having the same thought. He went to the next door and unlocked it, releasing an equally disheveled-looking Lilith. Vale was on Lilith immediately, cradling her head as if inspecting her for damage, while she muttered, I'm fine, under her breath. Meanwhile, Rain opened the third door, releasing Keturah, who just looked pissed. The first words out of her mouth were, that fucking prick. I wasn't sure whether she was talking about Simon, Septimus, or Kyrus, but in any event, I agreed.
That fucking prick indeed,
Rain muttered.
But later, let's get the hell out of here.
Vale and Keturah armed themselves with the guards' discarded swords, and I led us back down the hall to the tunnels, carefully closing the door behind us. I had no doubt that it wouldn't take long for Simon's men to piece together who was responsible. Going by the nightfire burns and the evidence of Asteris on the bodies we'd left behind, we had to get out of Sivernage and fast. We moved swiftly through the tunnels. When we were nearing the sewers again, the sounds from the castle within grew much louder, footsteps echoing through the stone with renewed urgency, garbled, raised voices shouting commands. That about us? Rain muttered. Probably, I said. I flung open the passageway to the sewers and held it open for the others, then sealed it behind us. Jumping into the muck wasn't any less disgusting the second time, but running from imminent danger did have a way of making it a little more tolerable. Still, I couldn't argue with Misha's gagged curse as we hit the water. As the traitors in the castle roused to our presence, ready to tear apart the city to look for us, we swam. We swam for our damned lives. Chapter 50. Araya. I wasn't used to flying for this long. My wings ached. More than ached. They burned. My body was depleted. As the only human, fine, half-human, my stamina wasn't as strong as the vampires, and a week of nonstop travel was beginning to get to me, especially since I had never done this much flying at once. I was grateful at least that I didn't need to carry anyone. Rain carried Misha, and Vale carried Lilith for the latter half of the trip. As a turned nightborn vampire, Lilith did have wings, which were a beautiful speckled amber that matched the color of her hair. But she wasn't a strong flyer yet, and while she did her best to fly for most of the trip, eventually, it was just faster for Vale to carry her. I could see Rain watching me too closely, looking for signs that I needed the same. But I was the heir of the Hiaj vampires. I wouldn't let anyone carry me anywhere if I could help it. I could deal with a little pain, even if it had me cursing silently to myself every time we landed or took off. When the wall of sandy stone emerged from the darkness, the moonlight illuminating a patchwork of cave structures, I practically wept with relief. Is that it? I asked. That's it, right? Mother, help me, please let that be it.
That, Rain said, sounding as relieved as I felt, is it.
My legs felt like jelly when we landed, nearly collapsing beneath me in the soft sand. Goddess. The idea of flopping over in it honestly sounded appealing. We'd only rested during the strongest hours of direct sunlight. Even traveling, albeit slowly, when the sun was weak enough that the vampires could shelter themselves with layers of protective clothing. I was exhausted. But I locked my legs and forced myself upright. I'd never seen the cliffs before. They really were an incredible sight. Bone-white stone rising from the desert sands, punctured with holes and openings that led into an elaborate cave system. They were taller than I'd imagined, stretching all the way up to the sky like they were reaching for the moon. They looked oddly like bones, a flat expanse of ivory skull and eye sockets. Most people stayed away from this area. The heat and the humidity were brutal out here, and the cliffs a perfect habitat for hellhounds and demons. What's more, it was highly isolated out in Hiaj territory, 100 miles from the nearest city. What reason would anyone have to be out here? Unless, of course, you were a fugitive.
"Well, I think this is you, Princess," Rain said, hands on his hips. "Go on over and shout hello. We'll kill whatever runs out at you."
I approached the nearest opening, squinting into the dark. I conjured nightfire in my palm, though the white flame did little to illuminate that darkness. Unending darkness, the kind that swallowed up light itself. It reminded me of Vincent's wings. Reminded me, I supposed, of my own.
"I don't know about that," Misha said from behind me. "Looks ominous."
"I wouldn't go in that way," a smooth voice called from above, distant against the desert breeze. I looked up to see a slender figure standing in the mouth of an upper tunnel, leaning against the wall. She wore all tight-fitting black, nightborn leathers, and her ash-brown hair, bound in a single long braid, flew out with the wind.
"Demons everywhere," Jasmine said. "Better to come up this way, Highness."
I wasn't totally convinced that Jasmine and Rain weren't going to stab each other to death the moment they were left alone. After seeing the wounds on Rain's back, I honestly wouldn't have blamed him if he did. But as Jasmine led us through the tunnels and into the settlements she'd built here with those that remained of the Hiaj army, she was surprisingly respectful of him, despite a few wary glares. The tunnels were dark and hot. I imagined that baking clay must feel a whole lot like this, but they were also hidden, and they were shelter. It was no wonder that I'd had such a hard time communicating with Jasmine, even through Vincent's mirror, aside from the fact that the thing would never be perfectly cooperative with my blood. Jasmine was in such a remote location that I had to imagine we were stretching the range of that magic. Remote, in this case, was good. Remote was exactly what we needed. It was unnerving to see what had happened to the Hiaj army over these last few months. What I had always known as an all-powerful regime of warriors had now been reduced to a few hundred men and women sheltering in caves. Others, Jasmine explained, had dispersed into the kingdom, taking shelter elsewhere after the armory battle, while her most loyal forces remained here, hiding, waiting. The caves were dim for my human eyes, though they were sparsely lit with nightfire lanterns. Warriors had erected tents in the offshoot tunnels, claiming some semblance of privacy for themselves, while common areas had been staked out in the main paths. It stank in here, the heat rotting the carcasses of the vampires' prey. Foxes, wolves, the occasional deer, and even a demon or two. Though I couldn't imagine how repulsive that must have been. Surely an act of total desperation. I'd been trained to recognize hungry vampires my entire life, and these ones were hungry indeed, their eyes tracking me as Jasmine led us through the camps. Still, the way they looked at me, even on the cusp of starving, was different now. They noticed my human blood, smelled it. That was biology. But they didn't look at me as prey anymore. Maybe the red ink on my chest had something to do with that. Jasmine took us to her private dwelling. A collection of objects stored in a dead-end enclave, covered with a demon hide flap. She'd stacked a few crates to create seats and pushed several more together for some semblance of a desk, upon which she'd spread a number of papers, most of them scribbled and bloodstained. It reminded me of what Vincent's office had looked like near the end. Chaos. This, I supposed, was what it looked like to lose a war. Jasmine settled on top of the desk, long legs crossed. Up close, in more light, I could see that her once fine leathers were now in rough shape, the fabric torn and patched. Several buttons were undone, revealing the top of the long scar between her breasts. I'd admit it. I hadn't thought much of Jasmine when Vincent promoted her, seeing little more than her sultry voice and low-cut dresses and delicate, well-tended beauty. Now, looking at her like this, my image of her from back then seemed laughably two-dimensional. I wasn't sure that I liked Jasmine, but it was hard to deny that I respected her. She looked us up and down, one by one. Me, Rain, Misha, Keturah, Vale, Lilith. Then she said, "You all look like you crawled out of a sewer."
Fitting observation, Vale grumbled.
Mother, I couldn't wait to get out of these clothes. I'd gotten used to my own stench, but I had no doubt that it was putrid. Probably like someone who had drenched themselves in shit and then moved nonstop across the baking hot desert for a week. A little smile curled at the corner of Jasmine's mouth.
"I'm well aware of the tunnels," she said. "Probably smart of you to use the most unpleasant one."
I didn't want to admit to her that the real reason we had picked the unpleasant one was because Vincent hadn't trusted me enough to show me any others.
"We made it here alive," I said. "That counts for something." "I'd say it counts for everything."
She leaned forward, her violet eyes like night steel in the darkness. Her face was such a perfect mask of deadly beauty that it stunned me.
"Now please, Highness," she said, "tell me we're about to take back our damned kingdom."
In response, I found myself smirking. Why else would we come all this way? I had told Jasmine some of what had happened when I contacted her before the rescue, and her own sources, still extensive and still very effective, despite her current circumstances, had apparently filled in more. But I briefed her on all of it just the same. She listened in silence, expression growing harder and hatred sharper. By the end, her fury was palpable.
"And now a bloodborne prince and a Rishon imposter sit on the throne of the House of Night," she spat. "Vincent would be appalled."
Vincent would also be appalled to see me standing here alongside the Rishon heir. Actually, a lot of my behavior these last few weeks would have appalled Vincent, but I tried not to think about that at this particular moment. "Not for much longer," I said. "How many men do you have here? How many more could you call back?" Jasmine's lips thinned. It took her a moment to answer, like it pained her to admit this.
"We've lost many. I don't have enough to retake Sivrenage directly, not with the Bloodborne there."
Her gaze fell to Vale.
"Though if you wanted to get rid of the Rishon, that would be another thing."
Vale made a wordless sound of disgust, his nose wrinkling, and Jasmine laughed softly.
"Vale Arturo," she purred. "What an honor to meet a legend. What were you? Nikolai's third best general?"
"First best now," he said tightly. "Others are dead."
"Such a shame," she muttered.
I wasn't sure who would get my bet if the two of them lunged at each other.
"Trust me, you'll be grateful to have him,"
Rain said at her wolfish grin, the kind designed to expose fangs.
"Vale, how many Rishon men can you get? Loyal ones, I mean. Simon doesn't have them all."
Vale gave Jasmine a chilling smile. Enough to take what little remains of the Hiage.
Jasmine practically hissed, and Rain sighed.
You know what I'm asking, he said.
Vale's gaze slipped back to Rain, slipping into serious thought. After a long moment, he said,
1,000, maybe more.
Rain looked back at Jasmine, brows arched.
Well, look at that. 1,000 here, 1,000 there. Sounds like an army to me. Maybe even a good enough one to take back Sivernage.
Keturah looked sickened by this idea. An army of Hiage and Rishon?
An army of whoever the hell is willing to help us get the Bloodborne out of this kingdom and the crown out of Simon's hands,
Rain said.
Does anyone here object to that?
A long silence. No one voiced it, but we could all feel plenty of objection in the air.
Of course, I said, there's option two. Which is to simply let them have the crown and wait for them to inevitably come root us out, if that sounds more appealing to anyone.
Them, Jasmine said. Her eyes narrowed at Rain.
What about him? What you describe is exactly what we have been living these last months. Why should I put my soldiers' lives on the line for his throne?
I never considered the Hiage my enemy, he said. And she scoffed.
You considered us an enemy, even before you killed our king. You destroyed the Moon Palace. You ask for my help to fight against usurpers, but you're a usurper yourself.
Rain's jaw tightened.
I told you many times, Jasmine, that I had nothing to do with the attack on the Moon Palace. And you're such a damned effective torturer, how could I lie?
This wasn't going anywhere good.
Enough, I said. This is an order, Jasmine. It isn't just Rain's throne that we're reclaiming, it's mine. And I don't want Simon or the Bloodborne anywhere near it.
Her eyes flicked between Rain and I. So this is a formal alliance.
It felt a bit odd to hear Jasmine, of all people, putting it in those terms.
An alliance that goes both ways, I said. We help him, he helps us. We take back the throne, and the Hiage are free again. No more hiding. No more fighting.
It sounded like a sickly sweet dream aloud. Jasmine looked at me like I was a toddler espousing the beauty of rainbows.
And, I said, I am queen just as much as he is king. When we've reclaimed our kingdom, I intend to rule beside him as such.
I could feel Rain's eyes on me, could practically hear his voice.
Really, princess, you're finally taking me up on my offer?
Fine, apparently I was. And hell, why shouldn't I? If I was going to ally with him to get Septimus out of this kingdom, I might as well put my ass on that throne too.
The silence was suffocating. Jasmine didn't show shock the way most people did. She just stared at me like she kept trying to make puzzle pieces fit together that were incompatible. I could feel it from the others, too. On me. On Rain. I wondered if this was the first they were hearing about this arrangement, too.
Finally, Jasmine said, Understood, Highness.
It would never get less uncomfortable hearing her call me that. But I tried to take this in stride, as Vincent would have. Like it was nothing more than a given. Of course a general would obey her queen.
You will work with Vale and Keturah, I said. Devise a strategy for raising our joint army and using it to retake Sivernage. The quicker the better.
I felt like such an imposter. But she obediently inclined her head.
Yes, Highness, it will be challenging, but not impossible.
Challenging has never scared us before. I found myself glancing at Rain, because, of course, he and I were the us. I had never fought beside Jasmine before, never would have been allowed to, and Jasmine would have never deigned to lower herself to it. But Rain and I, we had done the impossible together countless times over. The little smile on his face said, There she is. Then I looked to the rest of our sorry group.
all in their dirty and stained fineries from the wedding, more than a week ago now. Not that they looked much better than Rain and I, in our ill-fitting, disgusting leathers. A pathetic sight.
"But that can wait a couple of hours," I said. "Is there somewhere we can..."
There was no other way to put it. "Wash the shit off of us." Jasmine's nose wrinkled slightly.
"That would be a relief for everyone. No offense intended."
"None taken."
"There are hot springs in the lower levels of the caves," she said. "Alaya, my second, can show you. And you'll find some clothes for you, too. Something less marinated."
Thank the fucking mother for that. I wasn't the only one who thought so. Misha audibly groaned at the mention of springs.
"But Highness," Jasmine said as the others began to file out of the room, "if I may have just a few more moments of your time." I nodded, allowing the others to leave. Only Rain hesitated,